All right. Episode 447. We're going to hit the ground rolling. Rolling in a 1948 Ford. I don't know. What was the name of the carts in that video, JJ? Hello.
Hello. Shoot. What was the... there were a lot of them, actually, right?
There's a lot of GMCs and a lot of Fords. Michael, how you doing?
Pretty good.
You're driving a Honda these days, so that
Still
doesn't
am.
Help us.
Was that a Cadillac convertible at one point?
There was. Yeah, we're talking about the action button video. Michael, it's 9.5 hours.
That's a long day.
Well, it turns out to be long years, I think, is the answer. The new action button video dropped. We were watching it this week, and JJ and I were actually talking about it a little bit before the podcast, but it's about L.A. Noir, Michael. I think we talked a little bit about this last week.
Okay, yeah.
It turns out it's a very deep dive Let's Play, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen what it is for the majority of it, Andy. I mean, you've watched a lot of it at this point, right?
Yeah, my guess is he always does some sort of the bottom line thing. So I'm invested in the store of detective, what's his name? Cole
Phelps.
Cole Phelps. And a lot of the story is delivered as if it was from a pulp novel there, Michael. And,
okay. Yeah.
And so the criticism of the game comes as a, like, why would they give this to the, you know, newest detective on the force kind of thing.
You know, the detective who solved 6 cases is suddenly, you know, the street
in charge of the Black Dahlia murder.
And he's now in charge of the Black Dahlia murder after 4 cases. You're like, what?
Yeah.
He's promoted from the vice desk to the arson desk or whatever, right? It's like, that's what?
Yeah.
A big jump up.
Big jump. Very funny. I assume there will be more, not much deeper, but there will be more to watch as that goes on. But yeah, there's a lot of car crashing and vice citying of the game as he discusses it in the thing, which is quite funny to me.
And he makes a good point of talking about how much he shoots people to death constantly.
Well, it's one of those like games where, you know, if you played just the main story, it would probably take you 5 hours to beat it, right? And there's a question of how many of the side stories tie into the main story. But I'm pretty sure the giant shootout on top of a movie set thing kind of proves the point of, like, this isn't really part of the game more than entertaining you, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, was there historically a shootout on top of a movie set in L.A.? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Not that I recall. Very fun. Yeah, very fun. It's not the only thing I've been watching on YouTube, though, JJ.
Hmm?
In the same vein as Action Button, I have discovered a site that I sent to you and to Michael. Michael, you might not have enjoyed it that much, but I'm going to tell you about it anyway, because I think you might enjoy it as a side thing to listen to.
Okay.
Ristic Studies, JJ?
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar.
He's been making content for 7 or 8 years.
Yeah. A old school Magic player, by which I mean, like, very old. And has
Is
been
he
making
old?
Con-
I think he's old.
I mean, he's older than us, but, you know, that's a, it's a wide window, you know?
Yeah. He's a WiiWare gamer.
Maybe.
I don't know if you've seen him. He's on Tolarian Community College sometimes, and that's how I found this channel. He's very much a WiiWare gamer. I'm just sort of here to have fun, kind of not a tryhard, you know?
Yeah, I believe he has a successful Patreon, but he makes, you know, deep dive videos about topics that interest him related to Magic. He has a really interesting video about, I think it's this, it's like random cards. Like, I think he had one about Herloon Minotaur, which is like a really old, bad bad Magic the Gathering card, sure. but was popular from like the first sets. And so like the art became well known and he talked to a bunch of people, like deeply researched, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of that stuff is about half hour content. But the thing that I thought was cool that Michael, you might like, is someone actually diving into the artists and the art of Magic cards, which okay. really, I think a lot of times, he actually has a video called, that I watched multiple times. I can't remember what it was called, but it's a video that grabbed me, and it's sincerely only about the evolution of the border of the card.
Huh. Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I watched that one. It's good.
It is, I think, the thesis for his entire channel, basically, which is the care and construction of a Magic card and the historical development of a Magic card is in itself the beginning of where most people should think about how to make a game. And the form and function factors and how they both meld into making something as simple as a piece of cardboard that you stare at and then you read and then you play. And I've had discussions about graphic novels and comic books, and a lot of people who read them and they're like, well, the art's secondary, it's the story. Or like, well, the story is secondary, it's the art, right? And the perfect synthesis, JJ, as an inside joke there, the great synthesis, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
You like what I'm doing there?
I do.
That Magic has tried to play over time in creating a form-function marriage between their art and being devoted to art, and over time creating a functional, readable, well-maintained system of card mechanics, right?
Yeah.
And the amount of work put into literally every little change must have been quite a bit, because as a person that maybe we'll talk about in a minute that has gotten too into Magic, I can appreciate the nuance of like, well, these ones didn't have borders and these had borders and those were square and these were rounded and that kind of stuff, and why those things kind of matter, and like the mistakes they made along the way and how they course corrected on them and all that kind of stuff was
then
fascinating.
The borders were white for a while and people didn't like that, and now some people do, though.
I actually like white bordered cards.
It's controversial. There are some people who love them and some people who really hate them. And the vast majority of the cards are black border, but yeah, there are some that are white and people are like, hell yeah, the white ones.
It was used to denote a reprint card. That's why they existed.
Interesting. Okay.
Until they stopped doing that. So,
well, we could really get into it, but they didn't used to denote at the bottom of the card anything other than the artist's name. Right. So there was no way to know if you could really, really know, but early on in the game, an alpha and a beta Black Lotus might have looked almost identical to somebody.
Yeah. There were ways to tell them apart, but yeah, it's like very, very hard.
So they were like, well, we got to come up with an idea, and they changed it to white paper. But the most important thing, as I said there, was the artists have always been on the card. And so he also takes a look at you know the form and function things. Like, he did a whole thing about Siege Rhino and how it overtook the game and how they changed their policy about how to make cards after that, but also takes a look at artists and says, like, I think you should really look at this artist and here's why, and does 20 or 30 minute video on just the artwork and what it means to the game and what that artist's stuff means to the game. And I think that, as a side project or a side listen or something to have on in the background, is really interesting to me, because, you know, Magic is almost like art for commerce done by real talented painters, right?
And they have digital artists and stuff now too, but it is a, you know,
digital
it is
painting,
like,
too.
Like, you know, what do you call them? You know, I don't have the right word, but yeah, like art, you know, paid art, right?
Mm-hmm.
not like people painting for the love of the art, but they're being commissioned and paid to make certain things. And it is a tremendous volume of artwork going on to Magic cards year in and year out. A shocking amount.
Yeah. And I thought his dives into those were really, really fascinating. So I wanted to give that a shout out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to just dominate the beginning of this since we're already talking about the Magic cards. But
what did you do? Come on.
JJ, I haven't gone too far over the top yet, but I did spend
Says the gambling addict right before they hit the slot machine lover again.
But I did spend too much time last night staring at just lands for a deck.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just going on Archidect and being like, what about this land? And learning how to use Scryfall. I don't know if you have gotten really into there, but like using the ID functions and all these things to like manage thousands of cards like they do and finding mm-hmm. specific types of lands. And it's too much. The deck building bug will cure you of the deck building bug, I think.
The problem I have with it, and the reason why I don't like Commander, is that the card pool is too big.
It's the land pool for an Esper deck is like 4,000 cards.
Sure. Yeah, but like the real answer is you actually don't need 3,850 of those cards.
Sure. Of course. But, you know, you want to sift through them.
But you don't need to. Like, that's the thing, is like, yeah. You're doing it for no reason, right? Like,
well, you're doing it for
the good ones.
Yeah, you're doing it for the deck building bug. And the good ones, if you're going to do it on paper,
are very expensive.
$20 or more. So you got to look down. I mean,
you're lucky if some
cards.
Of them are $20. Some of them are many hundreds of dollars.
Sure, yeah. Because dual lands from Alpha... are legal in Commander, and they're $900.
Oh, you because
they never reprinted them.
You're lucky if they're $900. They're $1,000. But yes, it's a problem, which is why, you know, the formats that have less cards are typically more interesting, because you can actually like keep the set somewhat in your mind, you know?
Yeah. Uh huh.
Versus needing to have encyclopedic knowledge of every card in Magic's history.
Or learn how to use the Encyclopedia of Scryfall.
Right, but even then you're like, well, give me every card with a mana value of this and these colors and the four other characteristics that you want, and then you still get 70 cards.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Which is the problem of, you know, like they didn't have certain keywords and all that sort of stuff too, right? So constellation, right? Like an enchantment enters and something happens. Well, there are a lot of cards that just say when an enchantment enters and don't say constellation. So
correct.
You got to know all these things. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. The Magic building bug has bit me, but I ended up with a question. I'm not doing the buying. I'm just doing the building. The buying that is happening in the app where I'm not actually buying anything. I'm just managing wild cards.
Mm-hmm.
If you are using a land that transforms into a creature,
mm-hmm.
Does it have to have haste even if it's been on the board more than a turn?
As a non-magic judge, my answer to this question is, I believe the way Summoning Sickness works is when the creature enters the battlefield, it has Summoning Sickness. If a land turns into a creature, it did not enter. It was already on the battlefield, and therefore it is not summoning sick.
Ah, the word becomes means there's no summoning sickness.
Well, it's like, you know, you use the ability on the land, but the land was already on the battlefield. So it didn't have to entering the battlefield or enters specifically means from your hand into play, not from some other zone into the creature zone, right?
Fair enough.
So, obviously, if you transform it the turn you play it, it will be summoning sick.
Right. So you can only block.
Yeah. But, gotcha. You know, sometimes turning a thing into to block is pretty good. People forget about those lands sometimes, and you can get them, you know?
Yeah. Ah, it's got death touch. Now what?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, this land is actually a 4/4. Surprise. And you're like, oh, dang, I just lost a guy for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah, whoops. Well, I went back to the well and tried to rework my merfolk. Jesus.
Wrong game.
How many mer people are there? And, you know what I mean? went back to the drawing board on trying to get that deck to work better because I can't play in ranked anymore. So, you know, now it's time for fun and not ranked.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's Magic. Since we're talking about slinging spells, though, JJ, let's get on topic for a podcast about games. Let's talk about maybe you've cast the last spell.
I really would love to cast it, but it turns out like the whole game is the process of casting it. And so, yeah, I have not really casted the last spell.
You have not cast the last spell.
But I'm trying.
Will you cast the last spell?
If I complete the game, maybe. We'll see.
Tell the people what you're talking about.
Recently, was it last week, a couple weeks ago? One of those, like, you know, as a result of having Amazon Prime, you get free subscriptions to Twitch. And
I should probably look into that. I haven't looked for those in a while.
And one of the things you can do when you're on there is they give away games.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the games, just go log in right now, Andy. Like, go over there.
And, I'm doing it. I'm literally typing it right now. If you could hear me on the... you know what I have noticed since we switched back to OBS recordings is that I can hear my keyboard again, which I hope is not too annoying to people. Sorry!
Michael, do you hear him saying hashtag not sorry after that? I feel like
it's implied.
I felt like I heard it, but I didn't. Maybe it was a glitch in the
uh-huh,
thing. Anyway,
uh-huh.
Yeah. So the last spell was one of these games they were giving away for free. Typically, they're GOG copies or Epic Games copies.
Yeah. There's also Prime Games, I think. Right.
These are similar, but maybe related or not related things. I don't know.
Hmm.
Anyway, so they gave away a copy of this game, and coincidentally, at that time, I had been watching a streamer who was playing this game.
My God, I have like 30 games to claim. I'm not doing that while we're doing this live. There's no way.
Yeah, but I mean, they're free. You might as well do it.
Yeah. I'm going to do it later, though, so I'm actually paying attention to what you're saying.
And so I had been watching the streamer playing this game, The Last Spell, and I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, what a coincidence. It's free. I don't know if it was marketing. Don't really care. Anyway, the game is a tactical horde wave-based RPG kind of thing. And it's a grid, and you have a set of heroes, and you're trying to defend a town where in the center of town is a magic well being casted over by mages who are trying to cast the last spell. There's a whole bunch of like lore... basically, like, the mages screwed up the world super bad. There's, like, evil fog that turns people into monsters and stuff, and now they're trying to, like, cast this spell to, you know, rid the world of the fog once and for all, blah, blah, blah.
It sounds like maybe we don't want them to do that.
Well, the goal of the game is for them to do it, so you gotta protect the thing in the center of the town.
Okay, so you're protecting them even though maybe we shouldn't be protecting them.
People are not super nice to the mages. I think maybe
oh, really?
They're being forced to do this and they may not want to.
I see.
Okay.
I see.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad language used against them. It's like, you know, we wouldn't be in this place if it wasn't for you kind of energy.
Can't have that. Mm. Can't have those in a video game. You know, language like that.
There's a lot of heavy metal vibes in this game. You know, you're fighting
heavy metal like the cartoon or like the music?
Music. The soundtrack is very metal. There's a lot of like. The wizards are like the kind of thing you might see on heavy metal album art. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like evil gods and, you know, the monsters look like they're, you know, dripping with blood and kinds of stuff like this, right?
Okay.
But the game itself, you know, you have your little town where you can recruit heroes and buy items for them and upgrade their weapons and upgrade your, you know, your gold mines and resources and build defenses and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, that's the daytime and you hit, you know, end day and you go to the nighttime and monsters swarm at you from all sides and you try to survive. And it's not like, you know, there's 10, there's like 1,000. It's so many. I was about to say hexes, but they're squares. The squares, you know, all around the, just like swarm with monsters. And there's a counter.
We haven't really talked about gameplay too much.
There's a counter up in the top left. Uh-huh. You know, it just tells you how many there are. No, uh-huh. Just like it's like a progress bar of the night.
Okay.
And it just shows.
But how do they know how many they're going to get attacked by?
You don't. They give you an indicator of, like, you know, some, many, a lot from these directions.
Okay.
And, you know, you can spend money and things in town to try and, like, make it a little more obvious where that exactly is and this kind of stuff. But basically, you know, it's like the night starts, monsters swarm in, deal with it. And it's turn-based. So, you know, it's kind of a your people go, their people go.
Many whelps.
Right. And so, you know, each of your heroes has abilities determined by what kind of weapons they have. And, like, you know, any kind of perks and traits you give them as they level up. And so, you know, you have a sword, and the sword can attack straightforward like a thrust, or it has a skill based on how far you've moved and does more damage. So if you, like, run your guy around in a circle of squares and then attack, you get a big bonus because you moved really far. You know, there are bows, there are magic wands, staffs, crossbows, giant sledgehammers and maces and all kinds of weird weapons, all of which have different movesets. And your characters have, like, move points and action points. And so you got to move your people around and try and hold back the tide as best you can.
Enjoy the sound of this, yes.
Yeah, it's very, you know, I'm not playing on, like, the hardest difficulties or anything. It has a very cool difficulty system. They call it, like, apocalypse mode. But basically on, you know, when you start the town, right, like, you know, it's each town and then it's a progression of knights in the town until the mages succeed in whatever they're doing and then you win. Before you start the town, you have a bunch of options you can pick, like, you know, different modifiers or whatever, you know, because this is really a run-based game, I think.
Okay.
Because, like, you know, you're unlocking new types of weapons, you're unlocking new types of defenses you can build, new buildings, new armor, new perks, all kinds of stuff like this for your heroes, right? And then eventually you get overwhelmed, you lose, and the next time you start over, you have access to all these new things you didn't have before, right?
Oh, almost like I'll remember it. You keep going.
Okay.
Dead Cells?
Nope. 80s? Nope.
It is a bit like both of those in that the runs are the same, but, you know, you sort of have more going
Loop
into
Hero.
Sure, yeah, a little
okay.
bit.
Okay, yeah.
Right, Loop Heroes that do the thing. It's exactly the same, but you get more stuff for doing it more.
Yeah, yeah. Very different gameplay here, but it is definitely a, like, very fun, I wouldn't call it chill necessarily, but it's, you know, a relaxing time, even though you're, like, dealing with swarms and swarms of monsters. Like, you really have to get tactical, you know? It's like, okay, I need the guy with the sledgehammer over here because they're going to be huge swarms, and the sledgehammer can stun lots of monsters around the one that you attack. And if they're stunned, they can't move forward and attack your town walls or whatever, right?
Right.
Oh, over here, there's going to be a couple of big guys. Well, I want my archers over there because they can sniper shot that guy from way out, and then we won't have to deal with him, or poison him, and then he'll die from poison before he gets in.
Right.
And it's really interesting, you know, having to, like, And because the heroes are randomly generated, it's like, oh, this one has a perk that this one doesn't have and all that kind of stuff. You really have to think on your feet every round. And it's like, oh, all right, well, like, this round I got as a reward, like, this really cool bow. I don't really have any bow guys. All right, the dagger guy is going to be a bow guy now. You know? And, you know, you can carry multiple sets of weapons and swap between them, which gives you tons of options for characters. And you just have to get really creative with it if you want to keep up. Because, like, it is a staggering amount of monsters every night.
Hopefully you at least feel more powerful by the end, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can win, right? But, you know, it's a matter of, like, learning what types of monsters are going to come. You know, okay, well, this one has flying monsters. I should have stuff for that. This one has, like, big, beefy armored monsters. I should have different kinds of weapons for that because there are ones that are good against armor and ones that are good against flying and stuff like this, right?
Right.
And if you spend money in the right ways, you know, you can learn about that stuff beforehand or whatever. But, you know, if you're trying to get your economy and your town working, you didn't spend money on the thing that tells you what kind of monster is coming. And then now you're going to be up the creek when the armored guy shows up, right?
Right.
So I've been enjoying that. It's been fun. Plus the soundtrack is banging.
It's a little bit, it sounds a little lighter than maybe Loop Heroes, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think like Loop Hero is a little more, you can pause Loop Hero, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Think, do stuff like while you're thinking about it.
Yeah. So there's no, real time component in this game, right? It's completely turn-based. So you could just sit there and like look and think as long as you want. And actually the game is quite nice until you actually commit an action. You can take everything back. So, like, you want to move a bunch of people around to see, like, oh, if I move him all the way over here, can I hit this guy? No? Never mind. Take it back. Like, try again, right?
Right.
So, they're pretty generous about all that stuff, up until you actually, you know, like, damage a monster or do something, right?
Fun. Sounds like fun to him. Michael, what have you been playing?
What have I been playing? I've been puttering along still with a little COTC. But
give us the rundown, man. We haven't talked about that game in a long time. I think, JJ, is it on your phone still?
It's still on the phone, but I haven't opened it in like a month now.
MTG has taken over that spot for me of like getting 3 wins a day takes about the same time as I spent on dailies and COTC, I think.
Fair, yeah. Yeah, it's just making steady progress. We're getting a new story beat about once a month right now. Since it switched over to NetEase, the pace of new banners, has definitely sped up. So I feel like it's, there's a lot that's expected to come in the next probably 2 months here in terms of, several collaborations. They're rerunning Triangle Strategy. We just got the second Bravely Default collaboration, and then the second Nier collaboration is expected in like June, July timeframe. So there's a lot of stuff on the horizon. But it's just been sort of steady progress, up to now, really. The translations have gotten much better, JJ.
Oh, that's
if you were inclined to dip a toe back in.
I'm not, but that's interesting to
yes. know. Yes. And they've actually been pretty responsive too, in terms of taking feedback on things that need to be updated, like translation wise, and actually fixing them relatively quickly.
Good for them.
Yeah. So we'll see. Tomorrow for me, I think, is the very last of the letters on login. So login number 1000.
Really?
Yes.
That feels like something we should celebrate. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. So yeah, I'll keep puttering along with it. You know, it's not much of a time commitment every day, so.
That's true. It's for you, it's gotten a lot better, I would think.
Yeah. But I was actually excited about something that dropped last week, which was the new update for Monument Valley 3.
Whoa. All right. We haven't even talked about Monument Valley before the update. I mean, I think you mentioned that it was out, and then we talked about that it was on Apple Arcade and a few other things. But, I mean, if you're already talking about updates, I assume you've played through up until the update?
Yes. So I think we did talk about it mostly in the context of the fact that it was releasing first on Netflix games.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We did talk about that.
Which I think when we talked about Netflix games a little bit, we were marveling at how well integrated it is into just being able to log into it and basically have the game take you to the download page in the store, and then you boot it up and it's running.
Yeah, it works really well, I have to say. Although I did have a problem with Netflix games that I could talk about, which is it can lose your progress because it uses your Netflix login to keep some sort of like save progress. And somehow if you change Netflix accounts or something like that on your phone, then it doesn't know who you were and it overwrites things. So be aware.
Ooh, interesting. Okay. Shouldn't have that problem, but good to know.
Yep.
But yeah, so Monument Valley 3. So I played through the base set, which was really good. I enjoyed it. It's the same, you know, very kind of sparse storytelling, but no less poignant for that as the first two games. In this one, the world you're in kind of loses it literally and metaphorically loses its light, and so you have to go on a quest to get it back. But it's good, you know, the same kind of like bend your brain, maybe turn your phone sideways, puzzle solving. it had some cool, creative new twists on the same formula, in terms of some of the ways that you had to solve the puzzles, which is always nice, you know, to see them bring something fresh to a game that you enjoy.
Well, I mean, it's three games worth of puzzles after the first one, you know, like that's a lot. I mean, where are the Baba is you guys with a new game, right?
That's true.
I think
I don't know if they have
the Baba is you people have made at least one or two games since Baba is you. So
I assume you're correct.
They might not be like Baba is you is the thing.
They haven't hit yet.
Yeah. Well, it could be.
Yeah, but one of the, I think one of the most surprising things was getting to the end of that game, and, you know, it wrapped up the story that it was telling in that as kind of a complete story package, but it also had a more coming soon at the end of it. So the little doors, you know, the stained glass doors that they used for each level, they still had in the new game. And there were a couple of doors beyond where the story ended, and they had dates tied to them. So the base came out in December, and then each of the additional doors was spaced out every 3 months over the course of this year. So the very first one of those dropped, I think appropriately enough, on Earth Day.
That's really funny.
Yeah, given what you're trying to do in rebuilding a world, it was very appropriate.
I got a good chuckle out of me.
So yeah, I've kicked it off. I haven't finished it, but it's been good so far. You know, you're running around even before it takes you into the like main puzzle room. You're running around finding things on the kind of the overworld area that you're in, and there are some puzzles woven into that as well. So it's been good. The music, you know, the music is still great as it has been through all of the games. So if you're going to play, definitely play when you can turn the sound up and listen to it.
Yeah, it's one of those games I already know in advance. Like I have to. I have to have good headphones on situation. Yep. Very cool. Yeah.
So enjoying it. Looking forward to finishing this piece. And then in 3 months, there should be another chapter.
Well, I got to talk about something else that's murdering me with good sound.
Uh-oh. What you got?
I almost want to end the podcast early and hope that I could go back and finish it, JJ.
Hmm?
Conclave?
Oh yeah, you didn't watch it all?
I stopped halfway through.
Despite literally having been assured by you that you would watch it before this day?
Halfway. I assured you and I got halfway.
Promises made, promises
half kept.
Half kept. Yeah. That's a pretty good movie, dude. There's now nothing we can talk about because you haven't finished watching it.
So, we can talk about the music, though. The music is a bomb, I gotta say. Although it often feels like there's something very sinister happening when really it's just not that bad, you know?
The sign of a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Very fun. It's great so far. I intend to finish it shortly. But
My significant other liked the movie so much, she has now gone and gotten the book upon which it is based and is starting to read that.
One should shout that out so I can get the book.
The name of the book is Conclave.
how original.
You asked. Well, delivered. Okay. Sorry.
All right. Yeah.
I do not know the name of the author, so I can't give you that.
Robert Harris.
There you go.
Yep.
Very timely, given that there will be one of those happening very soon.
There will be one on May 7th. It will begin. Much of my watching of the thing has been the reason it was not finished has been pausing to look up if things are real / how they work.
I believe, with having done no research and having watched the movie, most of what is in the movie is real. That is how it works.
Yes, there is some other stuff that they gloss over, that they just sort of ignore, because it would make for a bad movie.
Yeah, I suspect there's a lot more praying than is depicted.
Yeah.
Given that these
there's also a lot more tedium and time. Like, my big note at the beginning of the movie, this is not a spoiler, is like, the Pope dies. Shocker. and then there's a 3 weeks later hard cut with a title card. Mm-hmm. And it's not a complaint. It's a notice that they definitely like cut out what might have been another area to go through with the things that are happening behind the scenes in order to get to what, you know, the story wants to be. But in my mind, I'm like, oh, I want to know how this was set up and that was set up and all the things behind the scenes that the main character needed to do and all that. You know, he seems exhausted by the time we jump ahead 3 weeks. So kind of feels like we missed something, but
I don't think you did, although I think the intent is for you to, you know, this man was his friend, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like going through the death of a friend and then also having a high stakes election happening immediately after is a lot.
It's awesome. Yeah. Sure. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's good. It's good. I've bookmarked the book.
Yeah, it was nominated for Best Picture, I guess is worth pointing out. It did not win.
It did not, that is true.
I don't remember which of the actors did win, but one of the supporting, I think it was the nun one, the sister.
Oh, interesting. She must feature more prominently past the point that I'm in.
Think that's the case. I have to go look it up. Someone from the movie won an Oscar. I don't remember who.
Best actor. Nope.
You'd be supporting.
It ran one for adapted screenplay.
Yeah, best for adapted screenplay is the only thing I see here. Supporting. Yeah, nobody else won.
Okay. Anything. Maybe I'm wrong.
That makes sense, though. Adapted screenplay from a book. There you go. Well, it's
okay. It was a nominee. Yeah, you're right. It didn't win. It only won the adapted screenplay.
This is great podcasting. Michael, I think we did not make it all the way last week through the things you've been watching, though.
No, so I finally got back around to starting into season 2 of Invincible.
Oh boy, To be fair to the audience, we're not going to talk about season 3, which is also over.
Seems like a good plan.
I mean, well, since you haven't seen season 2 yet, we should probably not talk about season 3.
Yes.
Where are you in season 2? So we can give people enough heads up of what they're going to hear about.
I just finished episode 3, which is the episode with Alan the Alien.
His
backstory and current whereabouts. And it has the big twist at the end of Mark being pulled into space under false pretenses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Welcome back. With spoilers, okay? I'm just going to say it. Spoilers.
Yeah. Spoilers. Welcome back, Omni-Man.
Welcome back, Nolan. Yeah, and you got to go to Thraxa then.
Yes.
Yeah. Whoops. Yeah, that was a fun little reveal. And the alternate Earth stuff for the first 2 episodes is kind of interesting as well. I would think it kind of, for you, maybe feels like a little out of place. I don't know. How did you feel about that so far?
I was okay with it, because I felt like without having any context from any of the graphic novels, it felt like they were setting something up, something like season long, maybe. And so I was definitely willing to give it some leeway, and, you know, let that breathe as they wove it into those first couple of episodes.
It's a good arc. It's only 8 episodes, so you'll kind of feel, I think, how things are going pretty quickly. Episode 4 is a big one. I don't know. JJ, thoughts on Invincible season 2?
I don't want
to give too much away, because he's headed for a few more surprises here.
He's headed for some stuff for sure.
Thraxa's is a. It's not over.
How much are you into space? Do you like space?
I do like space.
Is it? Are you enjoying the weird space of this world?
Like, yeah, the little that they show of it at the end of that episode.
Yeah,
I wonder. It's been a really big break for you between season 1 and season 2. Do you remember, like, some of these weird side characters? Obviously, like, the Maulers, you probably remember pretty easily.
Yep, I remembered the Maulers. I remembered Alan. I think that they do kind of, I will say this, kind of kudos to them. I think they do a good job if you watch the recaps that they have at the beginning of each episode of, like, mm-hmm. showing you all the little clips that you need to remind you of, like, hey, this happened, and this happened, and this happened, without, like, holding your hand or just dropping you into it without any without trying to orient you at all. So I think they struck a really good balance with that, and it helps kind of bridge some of that time gap.
It just feels like there's like a lot of character a lot of characters, you know.
There aren't that many characters who are coming back, and they don't drop them on you all at once. Okay. So you've got a little bit of time to be like, oh yeah, this was his, you know, his girlfriend and his best friend. And, you know, even more minor characters like, oh, these are Eve's parents, right? Who, her father disapproves of what she does and refuses to accept her help in any way.
Yeah, man.
They space them out, but it is a lot of characters. I mean, you know, you've already now just rattled off like 6 minor characters, all of whom came back at least once, and there are probably more, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure there will be more.
You're getting them at a much, much faster pace than the comic book, so.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's another
reason why I was wondering how you were feeling about it. That's cool. I mean, I'm glad you're in it, man. Season 3 is on my next the Conclave took over for season 3 here. That and the Righteous Gemstones came back, and I got to watch that ASAP. So we'll also be joining in the Invincible catch-up shortly.
Having seen season 3, man, some stuff sure does happen.
I mostly know. I mean, unless they change things from the book. So it's like, for me, I'm not in a huge hurry.
Right. So, yeah, you know. Although they did change some stuff in the first season, and I don't know what happens in the comics, so I can't tell you if it's different, but...
Fair enough.
Some stuff sure does happen.
Yeah. I know some names that are probably there, and I'm not gonna...
We won't talk about it, but Michael, I'm curious to see how you feel as you progress through season 2. I remember season 2 being like, yeah, by the end, I was like, dang.
This took me some places.
Yeah. And then they put out like a short movie, right, about Adam Eve?
Adam Eve.
Yeah. Yes, they did.
It actually happens before season 2.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah.
I think I saw it after season 2, which is not how that's supposed to work, but oh well.
Yeah. It doesn't really matter. It does give you more context for Eve by the end of season 2, maybe.
Yeah, I don't think it really intersects the plot.
No. No, I mean it's all backstory. I'll ruin it for you, Michael. It's a backstory episode. It's like a double-length episode almost. It's not really a movie. Okay.
Yeah, it's like 80, it's like 58 minutes or something.
But if you're like, man, I don't get why her relationship with her dad is so strained, that movie sure explains it.
Okay.
If events occur and you decide you want to know more about certain characters, that might be... specifically Eve, like maybe that would be a place to go, you know.
I think it's worth watching. It's one of the best episodes of the show, to be honest. But that's just one man's opinion. If other people have a different opinion, where should they send it?
They could send that to podcast@wewergamers.com.
That's our
yep.
Email address. We're on the internet, on YouTube. YouTube.com/@WeWereGamers.
We are also @WeWereGamers on Blue Sky.
Well, in the meantime, I'm going to go look at Scryfall.
Did you play that midweek magic this week, Andy?